Chapter 16, A Conflict of Authority. We waltz into town like the command section of a conquering army. I'm in the back of one of Camp Frostbite's armored cargo mules, eight-wheeled transport tanks shaped like giant doorstops made out of composite armor. The troop compartment is big enough for a 10-man squad and full kit. I'm the only fleet puke in the vehicle. The other seats in the troop bay are occupied by the COs of the two Homeworld Defense Battalions, the major in charge of the Spaceborne Infantry Garrison Company, and all three of their senior sergeants. In the bucket seat next to mine, Sergeant Fallon is napping, or pretending to, with her arms folded across her chest. By orders from upstairs, we're all wearing full combat armor, minus our helmets, and we're carrying sidearms and rifles. The general in charge of the task force is a reservist who hasn't seen any combat since the tussle with the Lankies started, and he's utterly afraid we'll all be caught with our pants down if the Lankies suddenly show up in orbit. Those of us who've been fighting them for the last 5 years know that it won't make a bit of a difference if we're in armor or not when they show up, and that our little oxygen tanks will merely give us a few hours to contemplate our impending deaths. But orders are orders, so we drive into town like a bunch of heavily armed football players spoiling for a fight with the locals. When we roll past the first buildings of New Longyearbyen, the HD troopers turn in their seats to peer out of the small armored windows in curiosity. I follow suit, even though I've seen plenty of colonial architecture in the last few years. Only the major in command of the garrison company doesn't bother craning his neck, and Sergeant Fallon is still snoozing with her head on her chest. New Longyearbyen is like no other colony settlement I've ever seen. Every single building is over-engineered, almost bunker-like, to withstand the harsh winter climate that locks the moon down for half the planetary year. Where the housing and facilities on a warm colony world are mostly the same standard squares of prefabricated modular housing, the structures here on New Svalbard are custom-made domes with meter-thick ferroconcrete walls. The buildings are laid out not on straight and even street grids, but in loops and irregular patterns designed by computers to minimize the effects of the 100-click-per-hour winds that blow even in the temperate tundra belt in the middle of the winter season. Our driver snakes the huge armored mule along roads that are mostly turns. When we pull up in front of the civilian admin building and the mule comes to a gentle stop with the snort of its hydropneumatic suspension, Sergeant Fallon's eyes pop open. She looks around in the crew compartment with an exaggerated yawn.
Be there yet?
Yeah, I say. Welcome to the booming metropolis of New Longyearbyen. Population 10K. We climb out of the armored troop hatch, battle armor scraping against polysteel laminate plating, as seven of us in full kit squeeze out of a hatch no designer ever tried to negotiate while wearing hard-shell battle rattle and carrying rifles with 20-inch barrels and clunky attachments. The admin building here in town is even more solid-looking than the bunker-like one the Chinese had on Sirius AD before their own attack craft blew it into rubble. The whole thing looks like a huge loaf of bread. It's windowless, and judging from the visible wall thickness by the regularly spaced entrance alcoves, the concrete is at least 2 meters thick. All along the top of the building, there are sensor domes and retractable comms antennas that make the building look like the top half of a fleet frigate buried in the permafrost. The four HD troopers look around with interest, while the SI major and his company sergeant look pointedly casual, old hands at the planetary excursion business. There are snow-capped mountains in the distance, much higher than anything the eastern seaboard back home has to offer. And I have to concede that as far as first visits to another world go, New Svalbard is one of the more scenic ones. As we stand and gawk, the closest door of the nearby admin building opens, and a uniformed civvy steps out. He's very tall, and his blue-shirted chest has a circumference that would give any fleet armor sweats if he had to be issued off-the-rack battle armor. His uniform is a dark blue set of fatigues with white arm patches. There's a shield-shaped badge over his left breast pocket that identifies him as a colonial constable, a civilian peace officer. He's wearing glasses with small circular lenses. As he walks out of the entrance vestibule and over to where we're stretching our legs, I notice that he has a 5 o'clock shadow at 9 in the morning. There's a sidearm and a well-worn Durathread holster on his thigh, an older model large-bore metallic cartridge autoloader. The military stopped issuing those 100 years ago because they're useless against battle armor, But run-of-the-mill civilian criminals don't routinely wear ballistic hard shell.
Hey, Matt.
The SI major greets the constable.
How's it going?
Not too bad,
the cop says. He eyes the armored eight-wheeler behind us.
What's with the hardware? You expecting trouble?
What do you mean?
The constable nods at the 35mm autocannon on the roof of the mule. The weapons mount is modular, and the crews usually run the local mules without heavy armament. But our task force commander's new orders regarding battle readiness aren't limited to trooper armament.
Yeah, that,
the major says almost sheepishly.
New management. Some Earthside one-star reservist who hasn't been in a tussle with the Lankies yet. I think he's expecting him to drop out of the sky any second.
Well, I'm glad you folks have some sensible leadership now,
the constable says with a dry smirk.
That pea shooter's gonna make all the difference if we get a seed ship dropping on our heads this afternoon. I'll tell the rest of the colony we're invasion-proof now.
Everyone has a good, borderline insubordinate chuckle at this. I decide that I like the tall constable already.
Introductions,
the major says. He points to each of us in turn.
Lieutenant Colonel Kemp, Lieutenant Colonel Decker, Master Sergeant Fallon, Sergeant Major Dalton, Sergeant Major Zelnick, Staff Sergeant Grayson. This is Constable Guest, the senior law enforcement official here on New Svalbard.
Out of a vast army of minions,
Constable Guest adds.
21 sworn officers and 4 part-timers.
He looks at the assembled inter-service mix of troops.
A lot of brass here for one little moon. I heard about all the new Earthside soldiers you dropped at the Terraformers. 2 battalions worth. Don't tell me we're getting ready to fight someone for this place.
Not as far as we know, the major says. We got something else to go on, though. Is the administrator in?
When isn't he?
Constable Guest says.
The science crew is here, too. They're doing their weekly admin devotional.
Without you?
Stepped out for some fresh air.
He shrugs.
Go on in. Second floor, the big conference room next to the kitchen. You know the place.
Yeah, I do.
Major turns to the rest of us.
If you want to follow me, I'll show you around and introduce you to the administrator and his crew. Staff Sergeant Grayson, you may want to head over to the airfield, meet up with the ATC on duty, and familiarize yourself with the facilities, in case we need your services later on.
Roger that, sir, I reply. Never was much of a meeting type anyway. I watch as the other troops file into the building behind the major. Behind me, the driver of the mule gingerly maneuvers his oversized vehicle into a clear spot next to the building, across the narrow street, to free up the path for other vehicles. Some colonists are milling around at a safe distance to watch the camouflaged steel monster with its out-of-place cannon armament try to fit into spaces never designed for space-borne infantry fighting vehicles. We probably could have taken one of the light, unarmored mini-mules or walked the mile and a half outright, but the new brass elected to take the steel beast, and I just tagged along for the ride as the junior member of the entourage. I've been to New Svalbard a few times, but always as a passenger on a ship stopping for water. I've never been down to the Civvy airfield. When I ask Constable Guest if he can give me directions, he shrugs with a smile.
Sure thing, but it's a bit of a hike. You can hoof it across town or I can give you a ride, if you don't mind being the passenger on a dinky ATV.
I'd appreciate that, I say. And you can be sure that any dignity I may have retained after basic is long gone by now. The airfield is much more sophisticated than I expected. I had pictured a gravel landing pad and a few fuel tanks, like the ones that seem to be standard on every minor colonial outpost. Instead, the constable's ATV rolls onto a facility that looks more advanced than the dropship landing pad up at Camp Frostbite. There are 6 hangar buildings with abnormally thick concrete domes, and as we drive up the central alley formed by the hangars, I can see thick hydraulic blast doors that look like they'd stop a Mars warhead cold.
They build it to handle all the planetary freight traffic and then some,
Constable Guest says over the low hum of the ATV's electric drive.
We don't have an orbital replenishing facility yet, but the crew at the water storage depot can refill the tanks on a tanker shuttle in 20 minutes flat.
The tarmac here is smooth concrete. There's a landing area for VTOL traffic that has 12 individual landing zones stenciled onto it, and the facility has an actual runway, thousands of meters of smooth blacktop stretching into the distance.
Dual redundant ALs for the frequent shit weather, full civil and military refueling capacity, and all the latest in weather systems and navigational aids. We even have a satellite network now for comms and nav fixes. The place may not look like much, but we have pretty shiny gear down here. All we're missing is an orbital service facility so the big guys don't have to send the tanker shuttles down here to top off their drinking water or reactor fuel mass. Of course, the way things are going, we won't be getting any upgrades anytime soon. Not with the colony flights at an end.
The constable lets the ATV roll to a stop in front of a building that looks like a small-scale copy of the massive admin facility in town. The only difference is the obvious air traffic control tower grafted onto the short side of the building that faces the runway and the VTOL landing pads. It's not just the colony flights, I say into the silence following the shutdown of the ATV's powertrain. Constable Guest looks at me with a raised eyebrow. You're missing a peach of a briefing up there in Admin Central, I tell him. You want to tag along while I bring the local ATC crew up to speed? It takes me all of 2 minutes to introduce myself and share the news with the half dozen air traffic controllers and pilots on duty this morning. By the time I finish, there is utter silence in the flight ops control room for a few moments, and the expressions of polite interest have given way to unconcealed shock and dismay.
You can't be serious,
the flight ops supervisor says. He's a stocky and hard-looking man who wouldn't look out of place in a master sergeant's uniform. His name tag says Barnett, and even though the civvy overalls don't have rank insignia, his demeanor marks him as the guy in charge.
Shut down all of it! The whole thing!
Yes, the whole thing. No traffic into or out of the solar system or between the extrasolar transit hubs. They pushed out a bunch of ships with supplies for the colonies and pulled the plug. We're on our own.
For how long? We got all the water we'll ever need, but we do need food deliveries. This place isn't exactly popping with agriculture, you know?
I've no idea, I say. I'm a staff sergeant. They don't usually invite me to staff officer briefings. The general says they'll keep it locked until they've figured out how to stop the lanky expansion. Chief Barnett chuckles without humor.
If the people of Defense are as dim as the ones running the colonial administration, that could take a few decades.
I guess we better figure out how to grow lettuce and potatoes in permafrost,
Constable Guest says. The local airfield's control center has better gear than any military facility I've ever seen. I'm in the middle of updating my tactical computer with the civilian frequencies when the earbud of my commo unit chirps with incoming traffic.
Sergeant Grayson, Major Vandenberg, what's your status over there?
Updating my tac kit, sir. Another 10 minutes and I'm good.
You may want to expedite. We're heading back to the ranch, RFN.
Copy that. I'm on my way. Grayson out. I shut down the data link to my portable tactical unit in mid-update reluctantly and gather my kit. Constable Guest and his ATV are gone when I get downstairs, so I walk back the way we came. When I'm about a quarter mile from the admin center, the mule comes rolling around a corner in front of me, much more quickly than safety regs prescribe for driving through a civvy town. I jog toward them, and the mule stops in front of me, suspension snorting air.
Hop in!
The company sergeant says through the open hatch.
Something wrong?
I ask as I climb into the mule and reclaim my seat.
Just a bunch of civvies throwing a tantrum, the major answers for him. We're used to it. Hard batch of people down here.
We drive back to the base, but instead of going back the way we came, our driver goes straight to the outskirts of town, and then drives around the settlement across rough terrain. We have to buckle in as the mule heaves and bounces on the rocky, uneven ground, like a ship in stormy seas. Finally, he picks up the hard-packed road well outside of town, and the ride becomes smooth once more. I know better than to prod the brass for more information. Instead, I give Sergeant Fallon a questioning look. She smiles a brief and clandestine smile, and very briefly forms a letter T with her hands, the signal for time.
It was a dipshit idea to go down there in an armored vehicle anyway,
Lieutenant Colonel Kemp says. He's the CO of Sergeant Fallon's HD battalion, and right now his mood seems to be somewhere between amusement and exasperation.
Not my orders, Major Vandenberg says. You may take that one up with your task force CO upstairs. I could have told him that the civvies around here don't take kindly to the military putting their hands on civilian assets on the best of days. Rolling in with a tank and wearing body armor, well.
We're back in the ops center on the base. I still don't know exactly what transpired at the meeting with the civilian administrator, but from the comments between the brass, I have a pretty good idea.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel Kemp says, I'm not going to make that call, that's for sure. Let me get on the comms with the old man and see what kind of flag officer wisdom he can dispense.
He sneaks just the slightest amount of sarcasm into his inflections. I decide that the mood among all the ranks, enlisted, NCOs, and officers alike, is unusually weird. Under normal circumstances, a staff officer rank openly criticizing the flag officer in charge would be tantamount to insubordination, especially in front of junior personnel. Sergeant Fallon, who's been leaning against the wall near the window, shoots me a glance and nods toward the door. I return a nod of confirmation and walk over to the hatch, leave the officers and senior NCOs to have their little command powwow among themselves. I leave the room and head down the corridor toward the chow hall. A few moments later, Sergeant Fallon hails me from behind.
Wait up, Andrew,
she says. I stop to let her catch up.
Let's find a quiet corner somewhere, shall we?
Sergeant Fallon suggests. We grab some coffee at the chow counter and sit down at a table by the windows. The local chow hall is much nicer than anything in the fleet, a compensation for being stationed on a frigid wasteland where you can't even step outside without heated armor half the planetary year.
Here's the deal,
Sergeant Fallon says.
Fleet said we're to take charge of all the civvy resources on this rock. Food storage, water reserves, everything.
Looks like our general doesn't want to go beg the civvies for food and water once we run out of what we brought.
Well, their head guy told our brass to go piss up a rope. His exact words, too. He also invited him to convey that message to the general. Said he'd post his cops by all the storage facilities, and that he'd have anyone arrested who sets foot on him without permission.
With civilian cops? He's nuts. No way his guys can keep us out. They have freaking pistols. Might as well throw rocks at someone in battle rattle for all the damage you'll do.
That's not the point, Andrew. You think we can just walk in and start popping civvy police? The locals outnumber us 20-1. We piss them off enough, we're in deep shit. I doubt that one-star reservist who thinks he's running the show from up there has the stomach to tell us to start shooting civvies.
And what if he does? I ask. Sergeant Fallon takes a sip of her coffee and looks out of the window, where the planetary sunset paints the snowy mountain chain on the horizon in muted shades of ochre and purple.
I'm done shooting at civilians,
she says quietly.
If we get deployed and they order us to open fire on those barely armed cops, I'll order my troops to stand down and fuck orders. I doubt the brig here on base is big enough to hold a company's worth of troops, assuming we go quietly,
she adds. She looks at me expectantly, as if she wants me to argue the point with her. I don't have to think about it very long. Shit, I say. Remember Detroit? If I have nightmares these days, they're not about the Sino-Russians or the fucking Lankies. They're about that clusterfuck. I ponder the swirl pattern of the creamer in my coffee. I was done shooting at civvies the moment they medevaced me out of that shithole. I'm not too keen on starting again. Sergeant Fallon nods with satisfaction and looks out onto the landscape of our temporary homeworld again.
I don't know about you, but I'm done shoveling shit for these people. If the Lankies show up, I'll gladly shoot every round in our supply chain at them. But if that idiot general tells me to point my rifle at civilians without danger, I'll turn in my rank sleeves and tell him to stick my retirement money up their asses, along with that medal of goddamn honor.